Wake up call.
This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
And it's hour two. Glad you could be with us here on Sports Map Radio. It is Wake Up Call. The PGA Championship will be getting underway tomorrow. It's Kiawah Island, the Ocean Course, South Carolina. Colin Morikawa won the PGA Championship last year. And it's okay if you forgot, because the majors were all kind of jumbled together in a post-COVID world. It didn't really have a place on the calendar. You don't really really remember when it took place. But Colin Morikawa was the PGA champion, and now we're going to a pretty good venue in South Carolina. One of the things, and we're going to have Will Gray coming on in just a couple of minutes to talk about this and who's hot, who's not. Rory McIlroy is coming off a win at Charlotte. Jordan Spieth has won this year, and he seems to be playing well at tournaments, even if he doesn't win. But we'll get, you know, who can win this thing, who can't win this thing. But one of my big questions is, it's May, and the PGA Championship used to be played in August, but when you throw in a major championship near the ocean, right, where water comes into play, different seasons produce different sort of weather patterns. We all know it. If you've ever gone to the beach on a vacation on Labor Day weekend, it's certainly different than when you go Memorial Day weekend, right? Depending on the time of the calendar, the winds and the weather affect the ocean and the beach a little bit more. What is South Carolina in May? Is it just going to be beautiful, light ocean breeze, or can we expect some serious springtime May weather that could affect the play? I'm interested in that because, again, this is a golf course that's tough enough, but you throw weather into the mix coming off the ocean, and it could produce some really exciting golf. But nevertheless, we haven't done this very often on the calendar where the PGA Championship has been played in May. It does leave a sort of opening at the end of the British, but this year the Ryder Cup is going to be played because we didn't get to have it last year due to the pandemic, and they're expecting crowds to return to the Ryder Cup venue. And that's good news, because the Ryder Cup, we said it all last year, if you could squeeze the Ryder Cup in with everybody being tested, you can't, because the part of the Ryder Cup lore is the crowd reacting to golf in a way it never gets to react to in any other tournament. So the PGA Championship starts Thursday. Will Gray, NBC Sports, will join us as we continue along. It is Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, let's go to the Progressive guest line. Progressive, making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. Will Gray, NBC Sports, joins us for the PGA Championship. Starts tomorrow at Kiawah Island, the Ocean Course in South Carolina. How are you, Will?
I'm good, Tony. Always good to be back with you.
Always good to have you on. All right, before we get to the players and the major, let's get to the weather. I'm really curious what the weather is going to be like, because when you play any of these golf tournaments near an ocean, the time of year that you're playing really does matter. May, South Carolina, ocean, light breeze, big storms. What's the weather forecast?
I think we're going more light breeze. I think this is going to be a good week for the Convention and Visitors Bureau of Low Country, South Carolina. If you remember back when this course last held the PGA in 2012, the weather was on the opposite side of the spectrum. They had crazy winds. They had big storms, pushed a lot of the golf into the weekend. Eventually, Rory McIlroy won. This is going to be a Chamber of Commerce week. No rain expected all 4 days, but the wind is going to be the key. It's looking like it's going to be, 10, 15 mile an hour range. But as you said, it's the ocean course. This is a very exposed plot of land. If it starts gusting up around 20 miles an hour, you could see those scores go very sideways in a hurry.
What makes this course, besides the fact that it's in the ocean, is it designed differently? Is it different grass material than what players are normally used to?
Yeah, they have to have different grass because it's right by the ocean. They have to have something that tolerates salt spray. But more so than that, it's long. This is going to be the longest course in major championship history. It was the longest course for a major back in 2012, and now they come back 9 years later, and they've added another 200 yards. It's almost 8,000 yards. Now, they've said tournament officials are going to move some tees around depending on which way the wind is blowing and how hard it's blowing. So it's not going to play that yardage every single day. But there are six par fours over 450 yards. We've heard guys like John Rahm and Tony Finau talk about, I'm hitting four and five irons into greens, and when they're used to going an entire week without hitting more than about a seven iron into a green. So this is going to be a course that really tests some of the best in the game, maybe at a facet that they're not used to having to perform.
So let's revisit something from a couple of years ago, because with last season, everybody was sort of shuffling it around due to COVID. But this is now a May PGA Championship, but it used to be in August. And while we haven't had many May PGA Championships since the schedule change, let's go back a couple of years. Why did they do this? Why did they decide to move the major to the May calendar?
Well, a big reason was what's coming up this summer, and that's the Olympics. The tournament PGA was still in August for the 2016 Olympics when golf returned to the Olympics, and it caused a really big traffic jam, and they had to move to late July, and it didn't work for a lot of people. So they thought, all right, we're going to move things around. A big part of this was the Players Championship moving from May to March. And so now you essentially have a big tournament, every month from March through August or September with the playoffs. You know, the PGA Tour was trying to move their end of season, final competitions out of football season. So now they're ending their season in Labor Day or around Labor Day rather than the end of September. So it was a lot of big pieces moving across the board. But one of them was definitely this championship beginning in 2019 went back to May. So it's in May now, and we're going to see it here for the foreseeable future.
All right, let's get to some players that could win this thing, and let's start with Rory McIlroy. He last won at Kiawah Island when there was a major there, but he's also coming off a win at Charlotte. I'm thinking his game is in great shape for this. Give me your thoughts on Rory.
Yeah, it's funny. He was pretty shaky at the Masters and the Players and the few starts leading up to that, and then all of a sudden he wins at Quail Hollow, and it was like the pen light in Men in Black. Everyone forgets about anything that happened before that victory, and he's now the betting favorite, and everyone's piling on Rory. It's certainly a good course for him. It's one that evokes fond memories. I don't know that his game is as solid tee to green as it seemed at Quail Hollow. I definitely still have some questions. He deserves to be the betting favorite, but you got to remember, at the Masters and at Sawgrass, those foul balls were going really foul. So
yeah.
It doesn't take much on a course like this to get into some trouble. I'm interested to see how he plays this week.
Jordan Spieth needs a PGA to win the career Grand Slam. I see him on the leaderboard all the time. He does have a win. He has not closed the deal at a couple of tournaments. Is his game fully there? I mean, is he back, or has he still got some missing pieces?
I think he's close to back, but not fully back. I think a lot of people are waiting for him to win this next major to declare him fully back. That win at the Valero Texas Open in April, his first since 2017, that was a huge monkey off his back. Now, we're no longer talking about a four-year victory drop, but as you mentioned, there's some extra pressure on him this week because this is the only major that he has not won, and really this is his first really good chance to get this win. I mean, outside of in 2017 when he was a couple weeks removed from winning the Open at Royal Birkdale, and he didn't quite play well at Quail Hollow, but we weren't even talking about him rounding out the Grand Slam last year at Harding Park. It wasn't even on the radar. Now he's one of the betting favorites. He's in the mix for sure. It'll be interesting to see if he does play well these first couple rounds, how he deals with that unique pressure, because there's only five guys that have won the career Grand Slam. He's trying to be number six, and that is a very short list for a game that has been played for 100 years.
Yeah, it's amazing. Like, Arnold Palmer isn't on it. Arnold Palmer, I think, was missing a PGA championship.
Yep.
On his resume.
Yeah,
Phil doesn't have a U.S. Open. So a lot of great, great golfers in the history of the game do not have the career Grand Slam. So, yeah, you're right about the extra pressure. Is there somebody that hasn't won, like Colin Morikawa last year, like, that could win this thing, like a Xander Schauffele, John Rahm, who seem to be on the cusp of winning a major?
Yeah, Xander Schauffele is certainly a guy that's a very popular pick this week, given how well he plays in majors and how well he played at the last major. He was right there at the Masters up until that shot on the 16th hole Sunday that went in the water. But he's one of those guys, you can put John Rahm in that mix as well, where you're expecting him to win multiple majors. It's just a matter of when he gets his first. But, akin to what you're saying about Morikawa, someone that's getting a lot of attention this week is Victor Hovland, who's another one of those guys that was playing college golf in 2019. He has now won twice on the PGA Tour. Both of his wins, they were in Mexico and in Puerto Rico, were on this special kind of grass that we're going to see on the greens this week. He's a guy that's very solid tee to green. I think this is a course where the ball striking is going to matter a lot. Being a really good putter might not matter because of the greens being so different. So Hovland is getting a lot of attention, and deservedly so.
Yeah, he's from he played college golf at Oklahoma State, right?
Correct, yeah. Yeah, he knows the wind.
Yeah, he certainly does. That's, in terms of the skills for this, I mean, I've been reading, like, look, if the winds pick up, short game matters. So a guy like Patrick Reed, maybe Justin Thomas, how much will short game factor into a course like this if the winds pick up?
I think it's going to be a lot more about chipping and pitching than it is about putting, just because the grasses are different. And then also you have huge, you know, banks and shaved off areas around these greens where the ball is being repelled away from the surfaces if you're missing by a little bit. And so you're going to be left with some awkward pitches, you know, 20, 30 yard shots that these guys sometimes don't practice as much, especially given these conditions. You know, trying to hit a 20 yard pitch shot into a 20 mile an hour wind takes a little bit of calculus. So I do think that it's guys that feel very comfortable around the greens that have a lot of different shots in their bag. That's going to shine in a big way by the weekend.
Let's get to some other golf news. The Ryder Cup is going to have some fans in attendance in Wisconsin. I'm assuming that's good news. I was saying earlier, it was one of the reasons I said you should have postponed it, even if you could get the players tested and nobody had the virus, and just because you can't have the Ryder Cup without fans.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that was the growing sentiment last summer as stuff started to move around, and there was talk about, well, we're still going to have it, but at 25% capacity or something. And you're right, the fans make the Ryder Cup. It's all of that emotion. It's having people on the scene and just feeling it, you know, in a visceral way. And the players were saying the same thing. Like, playing a Ryder Cup in front of no fans has no appeal for these guys who circle that event in a big way every 2 years on the calendar. They want the fans. They want the emotion. They want what makes it different from your run-of-the-mill PGA Tour event. And so I do think that it was a good decision to postpone it a year. It does look promising in terms of how many fans they're going to be able to have the last week of September. You know, certainly they can plan for things right now, but you would think optimistically that maybe they'll be able to bump it up by the time we get to the fall. There's a lot of roads still to cross this summer to see where things stand with the virus. So I'm optimistic. I think it's going to be a good event, and certainly one that a lot of people are looking forward to, since it's now been 3 years since we last had one.
It's such a unique event because it allows golf fans to cheer in a way they don't cheer at in other sports. They cheer kind of bad outcomes for the other team, you know, whatnot. But what I found interesting last year was how many European players said, no, I don't want to play a Ryder Cup in America without the American fans, because they also like looking forward to quieting that crowd.
Oh, absolutely. It's just like in team sports, when you've got a good team, if you're Alabama, you love going on the road and stomping your opponent and hearing the silence. And the Euros have been on a really good run. They had a couple of very remarkable wins on foreign soil that those guys, the key players on that team, you know, guys like Rory McIlroy and Sergio and Ian Poulter, they all remember the feeling of Medina in 2012, and that's what drives them. That's what they want to replicate, and trying to win an event in front of no fans, it was A, going to be more difficult because you don't have the emotion, and B, the payoff just wasn't going to be there. So I think everyone's pleased with the decision.
Is there a buzz, I mean, maybe it's not early, actually, it's going to be in a couple months. Is there a buzz about the Olympics? Are golfers not wanting to go, still wanting to go to Tokyo? What's the feeling about playing overseas there?
Yeah, it's a bit of a split decision. I mean, we're getting down to the wire with the qualifying. I think after this week's event, it's really going to start to shape up where guys are going to know what the pecking order is. Because remember, with the format, you have 60 players, but you only have two players per country. You can get up to four for a country like the U.S. that has a lot of guys in the top, but not everyone is going to go. It's, you know, that's the rule of the Olympics.
Right.
And it is split, where you've got some guys, Lee Westwood, Dustin Johnson, have said, listen, the schedule is too hectic. I don't want to go over to Tokyo in the middle of a very important part of the season. Other guys like Justin Thomas say, yeah, I would be kicking myself if I skipped this. I've got it circled. I'm going to go, and I'm going to be excited. So I don't really see anything wrong with that. I like the notion that you're going to have a field that is comprised of guys that are excited and want to be there. I think that's going to make for a better product and a better tournament. And if other guys want to stay home because of a variety of reasons, then more power to them.
Will, always good talking to you. Thanks for joining us again. And again, Will Gray of NBC Sports. Really appreciate your time, my friend.
Good being with you, Tony.
You got it. Will Gray, again, talking PGA Champ, a little golf as well, on a Progressive guest line. Quote, buy and save on home insurance with Progressive's new Home Quote Explorer, only at Progressive.com. Some of the thoughts that Will left us with, and we'll dissect that coming back on Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, keeping your car clean is simple and expensive maintenance that helps keep your car looking like new. O'Reilly Auto Parts has car wash and wax for painted surfaces, as well as interior care products like leather, vinyl, carpet, and upholstery cleaner. Visit O'Reilly for Clean Car Month, and their professional parts people will make sure you get the best detailing products for your vehicle. Shop your local store or online at O'ReillyAuto.com. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Good stuff from Will Gray, talking some golf. I'm so glad the Ryder Cup is going to have crowds. I'm so excited for that. The Ryder Cup is one of my favorite events in sports. It really is. It's so different. I just think it's like, for those of you who don't like golf because you think it's boring, I'm not mad at you for that. I agree. Sometimes these tournaments are dull. It's, you know, hitting shots and whatnot. But the Ryder Cup is so different because of the team format. And now, you, in the last 30, 35 years, the intensity of the matches has really gone up, and a lot of it had to do with Seve Ballesteros. Seve Ballesteros, there was a time with the Ryder Cup, just to give you a little brief history of this. The Ryder Cup used to only be the United States versus Great Britain. That was it, right? So if you were a European player from Spain, France, Italy, you didn't play in the Ryder Cup. But then they expanded it to include the basic stars of the European Tour. And when Seve could get into that thing, he then made it his business to win. And that sort of transcended into every player that was on those teams in the 80s and then the 90s. And that has led to sort of a level of dominance by the European teams over the years. There's been a lot of reasons why very talented U.S. teams did not gel well together, did not come together like they probably should, whereas the European teams, there's more of a camaraderie. But it really mattered more. It mattered more to the Europeans when Seve was on those teams. And you started seeing that change when the United States team started losing. Like, Tiger Woods wasn't, like, he wasn't a big Ryder Cup guy. He wasn't a rah-rah Ryder Cup guy at the height of his golf power. But once the United States started going, yeah, we just gotta stop. Like, we're losing these Ryder Cups. It's been a lot more interesting. And when it comes to the United States, there's just this extra, you know, you go to Europe, it's nuts. I mean, it's absolutely nuts. But here, it has gotten on that level. I have heard time and time again, professional golfers, guys who have won major championships, I mean, seriously, multiple major championships, say and admit, I normally don't get first tee jitters, but when I stepped up to the tee at Wentworth or the Belfry or the K Club over in Europe for the opening match of the Ryder Cup, I was petrified, just shaking in my shoes, like, because of the noise and the atmosphere and just this, I gotta hit one, because you're playing alternate shot in your first match or four ball in your first match, or your tee, you know, opening tee shot's important. Guys have shanked shots. It's like a potpourri of you know, nervousness, because it's another thing they don't normally do. You know, it's always funny. We talk about this with the Super Bowl, right? We talk to football players when they go to the Super Bowl and they say, yeah, you get nervous and you get excited, but once the ball is kicked, you know, it just becomes a game. It just becomes a normal game like I've played forever. The Ryder Cup, nobody really comes away from the Ryder Cup saying that. They never go, well, yeah, well, once I got it down the fairway on the first hole, it was just a normal golf tournament. It's never a normal golf tournament. Never.
No, because it's not, you don't have the traditional fandom, I guess.
Right, right. I mean, I remember as a kid watching it one year. God, I want to say it was the early 90s. And I remember the Spanish Armada. It was Seve, and it was at the Belfry, and it was Seve and Jose Maria Olazabal, and I think it was late 80s, and I remember Olazabal was hitting a shot. It was a par 3 over water, and I remember Olazabal, he was like a young guy too, he was probably like his mid 20s, and he hit a shot that landed like 3 feet from the hole, and they were going to close out their match against like Paul Azinger and Fred Couples or something, like a mega team from the United States. The crowd that was surrounding the hole, they started doing that soccer ole ole ole. They started singing that as the guys were walking up to the hole, but the camera was shaking. Like the camera couldn't stay steady because the noise and the crowd was making the camera shake. And it was like, you never see that in golf. Like you see it when a guy hits a game winning home run in the World Series, where this is the stadium is just electric and blowing. Like think of David Freese in like 2011 in that game six. But in golf, you don't normally get that. Like, because you're not in a team, the crowd isn't completely vested in fandom, right? They might be rooting for Tiger or maybe Phil or something, but it's different when it's your country. It's different when you absolutely want the other side to lose and you cheer when they hit it in the water, or you cheer when they three putt and you mock them and you throw out all sorts of comments. That's the Ryder Cup.
Because you have dividing lines, and that's where it comes in. I mean, that's why, you know, everyone could be a fan of Mike Trout, but not everyone is a fan of the Angels.
Right, exactly.
So you may secretly say, you know, I hope Mike Trout gets a hit today. You know, you want to see that. You want to see him score a run. But it doesn't mean you're a fan of the Angels.
Yeah.
And that's what this is. I mean, you might have fans, you know, it's like, oh, man, I hope Phil Mickelson, you know, I love the 50-year-old. I hope he has a solid round. But I hope the USA loses.
Yeah.
And that's where the Ryder Cup comes
in. That's where the Ryder Cup comes in.
You have a large part of people's like, yes, the USA needs to go down, and I'm going to boo them. I'm going to heckle. I'm going to, you know, do what all I can do.
And so the United States is hosting this year, 2 years from now, or maybe a year. I don't know when they're going to do. I don't know if they're moving it 2 years again or they're trying to get back on schedule. It got disrupted during 9/11 and it just stayed on its current schedule. And now it because of COVID, they might just go back to this sort of, you know, odd year, you know, Ryder Cup. But so 2 years it'll go to Europe. 2 years later, so we're talking 4 years from now, it'll be at Bethpage. And if Phil Mickelson is not the captain, fire every single person involved in the decision. Fire the secretary who had nothing to do with this. Fire everybody who had any decision.
Clean house.
Phil Mickelson better be the U.S. captain when they go to Bethpage, because nobody loves Phil like New Yorkers. They have showed that time and time again. And the New York crowd with Phil Mickelson as the United States captain, that is must-see TV. They're going to go ballistic. They are going to lose their mind.
Now, will he play as well?
Oh, well, he'll be 56.
Yeah, and so?
he might if he's still got some
that
skill.
Mean? You know? That's not old, right? Isn't 56 the new 38?
Probably, you know, you probably, there's so much going on with the rider because you set the course, you set the lineup. You probably have too much, probably too busy.
Nah, that's true.
Seve had the captaincy of the European team in 97 again in Valderrama. And it's legendary because he designed, like, he was, when you're the host, you get to design the course. That sounds silly, but you can put the tee boxes where you want them, and you know, you can put the pins where you want them, and like, you basically control that. And Seve was brilliant. He knew exactly his strengths, his team's strengths, and how that course would play to their strengths. And he had a mega superstar in Tiger Woods on the American side that he was trying to neutralize. And he was masterful, absolutely masterful. And they won that Ryder Cup. The European team, again, owes so much to Seve in terms of him stepping up and going, why are we just losing to the United States every time? Like, why are we doing this? Like, there's no reason for that. We have the best golfers. Like, we have Nick Faldo. We have me. We have this super young talent. We're winning majors. Why aren't we winning this? And so he didn't take second best at the Ryder Cup. And then he got the European fans to be more unified, to say, we're all in this together. If you're not just Spaniards and Italians and Frenchmen and Englishmen, we're all Europeans, and we got to take down this juggernaut American team that thinks they're going to come here and win this cup. And what was a very friendly matchup between Great Britain and the United States is now turning. I mean, seriously, I mean, I don't want to say war. That seems a little like hyperbole, but it's been a real battle. I mean, these guys really, really win this. Watch the guys who in the Ryder Cup, watch them act completely different than you see them when they're playing in the Masters and the PGA Championship and whatnot. So glad to hear the news yesterday that the fans, the full fan experience will be at Whistling Straits coming up. Good, Bad, and the Dumb coming up next as we continue as Hour 2 rolls along. It is Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
Wake Up Call continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, the good, the bad, and the dumb. We've got to move it for the Will Gray interview, but it nevertheless, no matter when it shows up on the clock, it is good, bad, and dumb. So let's get the good of the day.
All right, the good of the day. You know, we like it when actors kind of stay in character.
Yeah,
even
sure.
Even out in public.
Yeah, that's kind of cool.
So a reporter outside the FA Cup final, which is a soccer tournament that goes all year round or it goes throughout the season over in England.
Okay.
A reporter interviewed some of the players of the Richmond Greyhounds.
Yeah, the Richmond Greyhounds.
He had no idea who he was talking to. So the prominent voices that you hear is Sam. I'm going to call him Sam the Goldfish.
Right.
Because I don't know his last name in the movie or in the TV show, Ted Lasso.
By the way, what animal has the shortest memory?
Exactly.
Sam, goldfish. Be a goldfish.
Yep. Let's be a goldfish. And you'll recognize the other name, Danny Rojas. So here's how the interview went.
Where are you from, guys?
We're from all over the place. My boy over here is from Guadalajara, Mexico.
Wow, you're a Leicester fan, a Chelsea fan?
Leicester.
Yeah, Leicester fan.
Explain.
His grandmother always loved Leicester.
Plus, they are the underdog of the Premier League, and we support them. And Vardy, we support Vardy.
Did you come especially?
Yes.
No way.
Yes.
From Mexico.
Mexico to support my team, Leicester.
Straight from Guadalajara.
Yes.
His name is Danny Rojas.
We support the Greyhounds too.
His name is Danny Rojas. Remember,
we support the Greyhounds.
Danny Rojas.
Are you any good?
I think so.
Yeah, he has a song. Hey, he has a song. Na 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 na. Danny Rojas. Rojas. Danny Rojas. Na 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 na.
Okay, that is something that start. You could. That was like it started off. And then they started to realize what was happening.
Yeah.
Then it just got bigger and bigger and bigger.
Exactly. Yeah. And they stayed with it, especially when they go.
With it,
oh,
right.
We're also fans of the Greyhounds.
Right. As soon as somebody went, all right, let's have some fun with this.
And you just see this report. I mean, I cut it down because it's a little bit longer than that. The reporter really had no clue who these kids were.
Yeah.
They had no idea. And be honest with you, I mean, they could be just a group of lads outside of a soccer stadium.
Well, you know what? One question we never asked, even though streaming is global, is Ted Lasso a popular British show?
Boo. That's a good question.
You know, we kind of like Jason Sudeikis, so... We kind of knew about it a little bit, but, sure, somebody in London could easily watch it, too, on an Apple TV, but maybe it's not a popular show over there.
Yeah, maybe they're like, oh, this is stupid.
Yeah, this is dumb.
Exploiting us.
Exactly. American football coach coming to coach a manager.
But it's always fun.
Yeah, that is great. All right, what's the bad of the day?
All right, have I made my opinions of Albert Pujols being signed by the Dodgers on here?
Not yet.
All right.
I was curious your thoughts.
So, I'm open to the idea.
Yeah.
But I'm reserved right now. Okay? I know we have a first ballot Hall of Famer playing first base right now. I like that idea, but I also know that we might have in the stat sheet it says 41-year-old, but I'm pretty certain we have a 44, 45-year-old first baseman.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Where this slips into the bat of the day is what happened to him yesterday.
Okay.
Nick Ahmed, the Dodgers were playing. Oh, God, I'm already forgetting who the Dodgers were playing yesterday because that's how much I care about the other team.
they're just in your way.
They're just, kind of in the way. They're playing against the Diamondbacks. And Nick Ahmed is the left fielder. Okay?
All right.
He moved up in left field when Albert Pujols came up to bat. Not once, but twice. Threw him out at first base.
Oh, my gosh.
From left field.
It's probably why the Angels went, yeah, get out.
Now, I will say shallow left field because it makes me feel a little bit better. But nonetheless, you hit a ball to left field, you get first base.
Supposed to get first base. You're not supposed
that's
to get
a
thrown
given.
Out. Yeah.
And you know, we've seen players get thrown out from right field. That makes sense. It's right there. But, yeah, Albert Pujols not once but twice got thrown out at first base by Nick Ahmed in
was
shallow left field.
Was he moonwalking to first base? What was he doing?
Can he
run to first base at all?
It looks like he was sprinting hard, Tony.
Oh,
it's like you and I sprinting. You and I would get thrown out of first base easily, but we're not professional athletes.
Yeah.
So it's when things like that happen, I'm having a little bit of an issue with.
Yeah. Look, it's okay to say goodbye. It's okay.
It is. It
you
is.
Know, it's okay to go, yeah, I can't do it anymore. We'll all feel for you because that time has either come for most of us or is coming to some of you.
I mean,
that moment where you go, I can't do it anymore.
For the Dodgers, it makes sense. They got a lot of guys injured. We really don't have a first baseman right now. You got them really cheap. You're only paying like $400,000 for them for the rest of the season. But at some point, you know, somebody needs to sit down with Albert and go, Albert, time to just sign that one-day contract with the Cardinals. Because we know you're going to do it.
No kidding.
You got to retire as a Cardinal. I mean, that's where the legend began. Sign the one-day contract.
You just do it. Just do it and be just call it a career. You got to know your limitations, man.
I mean, thrown out at first once by a left fielder is bad, but twice? God.
Yeah, it stinks. Look, when I was younger, when I played golf, the one thing I could do really good when I was playing golf when I was a kid is I could hit the ball far. I swung really fast. And, you know, when I would connect, I could hit it far. And so I kind of developed my game around that. And I wasn't the best putter. I was actually kind of a lousy putter. But, you know, and I worked on my other games. But I loved hitting the ball far. When I got
You're
to
happy
point,
Gilmore.
Yeah. When I got to an age where I usually play golf alone. I usually go to a course. I'm a single and sometimes I get paired up. I remember not that long ago, 4 or 5 years ago, I got paired up with two college kids. I'll drive maybe by 30 yards, and I just went, oh, it's here, right? I was in my early 40s at the time. I'm like, it's here. I'm never, ever, ever going to get that. What they just did, I'm never going
to
get that again.
When you step up to the tee box, and you're like, oh, man, I don't know what's wrong with my shoulder today.
Yeah,
just, you know,
I know.
Don't get old, kids. It's stiff.
It's right. I mean, I'm just like, they're just my. I would hit a good shot. I did as far as I could. Their ball would just wave to mine as it was in the air, just flying over it. Bye. Yeah, it just – the one time I outdrove these kids, I wanted to take a picture. There was one time I did it. One time of 18 holes, one hole – I caught it right on the screws, and my ball was ahead of theirs by like 10 yards.
Yeah, where was the video camera?
I know, right? But when Father Time hits you, you have to sometimes go, okay, my world is now different. It's never going to be the same again. And Albert Pujols needs to realize he's not going to wake up one day and be able to go faster down the first baseline. That's not coming. No matter how much he trains, flexibility, all that, he's not going to run any faster to first base than he is right now today. The best he can do is it. There's no getting better at his age. And that's a hard pill to swallow. I'm sure it is. I'm just a recreational play maybe once a week, maybe if I can, golfer. He's lived baseball since he was a little kid. That's going to be exponentially worse for him than it was for me when I realized I was getting old. But at the same time, you have to come to that conclusion in your life, right?
Yes.
You have to come to that conclusion. It's not embarrassing. You just have to say, I'm going to get thrown out at first base a lot when I hit the ball to left field if I keep doing it, or I hit the ball the outfield. Like, that's going to happen, right? I hit the right field, I'm going to get thrown out.
I mean, you're old, Albert.
That's right. All right. What's the dumb of the day?
All right, this might be a preemptive dumb, or it could be a false dumb. I might be taking this back, but Derek Jeter is set to have a multi-part documentary.
Okay,
about
I
him,
saw
called
this.
The Captain.
I saw this, and the immediate instant Twitter reaction was this would be boring.
Well, the immediate reaction, you know, like, or the immediate comparison, because they say multi-part, is like, oh, it's called The Captain. I don't know if it's done by the same crew, but it's going to be done the same style as The Last Dance.
Okay, so this is a Jeter-oriented project?
Yes.
Like Michael Jordan was very involved in The Last Dance?
Right, and then the Players Tribune is you know, one
Jeter's
of the,
thing
is one of the productions. Yeah, he founded the Players.
He founded
Tribune.
That's his thing,
and it's part of the production crew, if you will. It's not producing the documentary, but it's going to have a set. He will see it and probably have, you know, probably dictate on what can be shown and what can't be shown.
I don't like this. I need an unauthorized Derek Jeter
documentary. Now it promises to pull back the curtain.
Nah, whatever.
And that's where I'm like, really?
No.
I mean, what I want to know, was there really a basket of cell phones went to his house?
Right.
I want something like that.
Right.
I don't need to know that Jeter was the toast of New York.
No, there was that one girl who got two. She's like, yes. I got this like 3 months ago.
Yeah, I mean, are we going to have those interviews? And is he as compelling as Jordan? I know he's a big deal in New York, but nationwide, worldwide, was Jeter that big of a deal?
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point.
So I'm reserved by this. I mean, I get, hey, if you want to do a 30 for 30 on Jeter's life, you want to do an hour-long thing, okay. I get that. You know, if you wanted to do a two-part series, fine by me.
This is why I want an unauthorized biography. I am curious about one thing. He spent all of those years in New York, and somehow he did not get himself in the news.
Never on page six? That's
page
what it
six.
Is?
Like, he never had the scandal. I get it. He was the prince of the city. The Yankees were riding high. I understand. But New York media will come after you, and they will find a way. That's what they sell papers that way. He just avoided that in the most unique way I've ever seen a celebrity who made New York City their home. And that fascinates me. Now, I'd like to know from people who know, how did he do it? How many did his people have enough?
What was the secret?
Did his people have enough to call the papers to kill stories?
But see, I have a feeling that we won't see that.
Right.
And that's why it might be a premature dumb, but that's why once I heard him, like, yeah, okay, you're going to pull back the curtain, but how much of the curtain are you going to pull back? Are you just going to show us the shoes instead of ripping the whole thing back and show us the wizard completely behind the curtain?
If you found out that he had representatives that would call the New York Post and say something like, if Cindy Adams runs that story, Joel Sherman will never get spoken to again.
Right.
He will never talk to Joel Sherman forever if Cindy Adams runs that piece about him being at that club on Tuesday night.
No, because it's going to paint him in this...
Right.
You know, goody two-shoes
light. They will never do that. And I'm not saying that happened. I'm just saying that could be the only one of the explanations why the gossip pages toyed with Jeter a little, but never went full scandal.
No, the most scandalous thing I think we have about Jeter that we talk about with him during his playing days is his starting lineup.
Yeah.
You know, which is nothing to be really scandalous about, because he was a bachelor in the number one media market and on the number one team in the like one of the most prized positions in all of baseball. Of course he's going to be.
Is it wrong for me when any of those girls get married to go, oh, that was a Jeter squeeze. Like, that was a Jeter girl.
Oof.
Was that wrong?
No.
Because I'm always like, wow, she... But that, you know, because Trevor Noah,
so many.
Trevor Noah just broke up with Minka Kelly, and my first thought was, it was a Jeter girl.
Thought that was going to be the one for Jeter.
Scarlett Johansson got married. I was like, Jeter girl.
Yep. Miranda Kerr.
Right.
I don't think she's married yet, but
who
I know.
What's the other one? There?
I don't know.
Jordana Brewster.
Was she a Jeter girl?
Yeah. She was a Jeter girl. Mariah Carey. He was a rookie. He told Mariah Carey she was crazy. He wanted her away. He wanted to be done. He didn't want Mariah Carey around. Mariah Carey was the biggest star at the time. And he said, you're nuts. Get away from me. He was like 22. He's a kid. But he already knew how to play that angle. But I agree with you. Back to the big story. I agree with you. I think that this is not going to be what people think it's going to be. I think their idea or his idea of what pulling back the curtain is and what the American public would want to see pulling back the curtain is two different things.
Right. It could be premature. It could come and blow our minds. And I promise you, if that happens, we will cover it. We might do 2 hours on it.
Exactly.
Just talking about, can you believe this? But
You know what? Like I said, I liked The Last Dance. It was great. I thought it was fun. I watched every second of it, but I did know what I was. I knew what I was getting into when I knew it was produced by Michael Jordan.
But also, that part of the appeal was the nostalgia to it.
Sure, of course it was, without question.
Is there enough time lapse for Jeter nostalgia?
Yeah,
for that time frame.
And I don't think the Yankees of the late '90s captivated America like the Jordan Bulls.
No,
team. Like
not at
like
all.
A lot of people hated those Yankee teams and still hate the Yankees, but the Bulls were like sort of this. Ah, man, I got to watch this. This is great sort of thing with the Jordan Bulls teams. All right, that's the good, the bad, and the dumb as we continue in his Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
I would want to know, though, about the... Remember the Alex Rodriguez when he got to the Yankees?
Yes.
And he goes, we used to hang out at his house. I used to sleep over at his house. Remember that little...
Well, that's where we got some of the info that, you know, everyone put cell phones in a basket.
That's right. Exactly.
At the door. People used to put keys in a jar, not Jeter. Cell phones in a basket.
How many pieces of this documentary did they say? Six?
They just said multi-part.
Okay. All right. So they didn't give it a thing.
Because,
okay.
I mean, honestly, they might be editing it and going, guys, we maybe two.
Right.
To make this interesting.
By the way, this hour of Wake Up Call presented by Rocket Mortgage. You need a mortgage to fit your life, Rocket can. So, yeah, I'll look forward to the Jeter documentary, I guess.
I mean, I'm curious about it. I just, how much of the curtain are they going to pull back? That's what I want to know.
I thought the Tiger Woods HBO documentary was great.
Yeah.
I thought it was really good. It was like, it really, really made you go, man, there's more layers to this onion than you think. And then, I Jeter is one of the more predominant athletes of his time. You know, with the story.
Yeah, and
history.
I mean, it's going to cover baseball, his life in baseball, to becoming an executive at the Marlins, owning the Marlins, so Players Tribune. It's going to cover all facets of his life. But how much are they going to cover what we really want to know?
If it's a PR fluff piece, America will spit that out quick.
Yeah,
yeah. Jake Asman Show coming up next. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you tomorrow for Throwback Thursday. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio. Have a great day.